Hello, and welcome to my podcast. This is an audio version of my videos, available to make listening to my stuff in the background easier than YouTube makes it. But since my videos are primarily made for YouTube, there may be occasional references to visual materials. If you'd like this podcast ad-free, you can join us on Patreon at patreon.com/vicerhino. Please enjoy. Hello, and welcome to my channel. Vice Rhino here. Today, I found a channel called Creation Worldview. Their bread and butter seems to be these short 2 to 3 minute answers to questions about creationism, and while I'm sure I could if I tried, I won't turn a 2 minute video into a half hour response worthy of being chopped into two parts. So instead, I'll do two of these videos in one shorter video each. The first is their most recent. It is called The Christian and Evolution, and seems to be about why some Christians can believe in evolution. Let's see how they answer that.
It's perhaps understandable that evolution is the natural way of thinking for an atheist, but why do you think that some Christians also believe in evolution?
Before I let them answer the question, I'll go ahead and give it a shot myself. It's because evolution itself has nothing to do with religion, at all. It's just how biology operates. Christians who don't go in with the presupposition that evolution is wrong have no trouble believing in evolution because that's where the evidence points. They look at evolution as the way God created the life that we see today. Are there theological problems with this position? Sure, but as an atheist, I can tell you that my preference is for the Christian who can accept the truth even when it is theologically problematic over the one who insists on the denial of science and truth in order to remain theologically consistent.
Well, first of all, the atheist, remember, atheism is a religion.
Nope, it sure as hell isn't. Atheism answers one question, and one question only. Do you believe that a god or gods exist? That's it. There are no tenets, no core beliefs, no statements of faith, no requirements other than just not believing in gods. You can even be an atheist and believe in the supernatural. I have met atheists who believed in transdimensional immortal beings. I've met atheists who believe in astrology. I've met atheists who believe in ghosts and spirits. Anything goes, really, as long as your answer to the question, do you think any gods exist, is no.
It's not a science.
Well, at least we can agree on that. Atheism itself is not a science. Atheism is a response to one single little question.
And evolution is a tenet of the religion of secular humanism, which is the technical name for atheism.
No. Depending on how you define religion, secular humanism could be categorized as a religion based on a technicality, but ultimately, if you go to their website, they do not consider themselves a religion. But I hate definition fights, so let's just go with sure, they're a religion, if you define religion in a broad enough way as to include a philosophy that specifically excludes everything normally thought of as being religious in nature. So, they're a religion, whose core tenets are a naturalistic philosophy, a cosmic outlook rooted in science, and a consequentialist ethical system. So, evolution is not on the list. But it does end up being included, because of that whole, you know, rooted in science thing.
So, evolutionists believe in evolution because it allows them to believe that there is no God, that there is no sin, that there are no consequences.
Not really. For most atheists, evolution isn't really a consideration in the matter. I know a lot of people who are atheist and just don't care at all about science or evolution, one way or the other. Now, sure, if you ask them, they'll probably agree that they accept evolution, but that's not because they have put a good deal of thought into it and they want to sin or whatever. It's because that's what they know is the currently accepted explanation. As to wanting to sin, I know many, many atheists that live lives that are a lot closer to what the religious would call godly than a lot of Christians, so the whole just being an atheist in order to sin thing doesn't make any sense in that context. Like, me personally, I have been married and faithful for 15 years. The only times I ever really drink are for the drunken movie nights on my channel. I don't party, I don't sleep around, I don't get angry often, I don't fight. If I went to church, I would be the model Christian without changing anything about my behavior. My behavior did not change at all when I stopped being a Christian. So if I just became an atheist so I could deny God and sin, where are all my hookers and drugs? Someone send hookers. I'm missing out. Better send some for Mrs. Rhino, too. We can live the godly life just like Jerry Falwell Jr. Oh, wait. I was supposed to be living the atheist sinner's life, not the Christian leader's life.
That you're nothing but a thinking animal.
being a thinking animal does not mean that you are nothing but a thinking animal. The thoughts of the thinking animal are rather important, as it turns out.
And that when you die, you simply cease to exist and there is no judgment. That's part of their religion.
Judgment has nothing to do with it. And also, there are atheists who do believe in an afterlife. It's a bit of a weird position, in my opinion, but they exist. Also, recall that one of the core tenets of secular humanism is consequentialist ethics. That is, actions have consequences, and rather than wait for a judge in a realm that we don't even have any evidence even exists to dole out justice, we are responsible for that ourselves here on Earth. Not through vigilante justice, but through a careful examination of ethics to come up with an ethical system, and then working to shape society's ethical system to something that matches up with these consequentialist ethics.
Unfortunately, of course, many Christians get educated in government-run public-type schools.
So you're anti-education? Why doesn't that surprise me?
And not just in the United States or the UK, but in most countries around the world.
Most countries educate their children? Oh, the horror!
Won't somebody please think of the children?
And most governments around the world have become socialistic in their way of dealing with issues.
What does that have to do with evolution? Socialism is a political and economic idea, and much like atheism, it's not monolithic in nature. Socialism comes in all kinds of different flavors, from communism and Marxism, to democratic socialism, to eco-socialism, to anarcho-communism, to religious socialism, and more. Yes, the government providing education to children could be considered a socialist idea, but regardless of what scary label you put on it, access to education is an important factor in the quality of life of a nation, so providing education to the populace of a nation is ultimately good for that nation.
Now, this is programming. This is propaganda.
I mean, there are definitely places in the U.S. where propaganda does make its way into the classroom, notably the history textbooks that do things like portraying slavery in a positive light and not mentioning slavery as the cause of the U.S. Civil War, usually deflecting to the states' rights argument, which, in the case of the Civil War, was the states' rights to own slaves. How many U.S. students learned that George Washington became a slave owner at the age of 11, was ruthless in his policies regarding escaped slaves, and, well, yes, did technically free his slaves in his will, they still had to wait for his wife to die first? The chopping down of the cherry tree and the kneeling in Valley Forge are much more prevalent, and they are both pure propaganda. Now, I can't really speak to what the U.S. is doing with regards to their history courses currently, but I can tell you that my kids, in their government-run schools, are being educated about some of the horrid that Canada has done in the past, like the residential schools for Native Americans, where they would forcibly take children away from their parents, sometimes as early as 4 years old, put them in a boarding school, and best case scenario, would cause them to forget their culture and language by keeping them away from their communities for 8 months out of the year, changing their names in the process, and worst case scenario, would result in abuse, neglect, and death. And this isn't some history of what happened in the 1800s. The last residential school in Canada wasn't shut down until 1996. Canadian government-run schools are doing what they can to make sure that this history is taught accurately without propaganda to puff up national pride. But something tells me you're not talking about actual propaganda. You're talking about science and the refusal to include long-debunked hypotheses in the science classroom.
This is not education, it's indoctrination.
Says the guy whose book literally says, get them while they're young so that you can prevent them from departing from what you teach them when they grow up.
And the schools only teach one side of the issue. That's not good education.
It is a fantastic education if the other side of the issue is known to be wrong and has been known to be wrong for over a century now.
And so because in the schools people are learning evolution only and being told it's science, which it isn't, then when they are Christians, they try to meld the two together thinking, well, I can just compromise between the two.
Thing is, though, it's not just evolution. Sure, evolution is science and it does happen. And if it were all by itself, not being supported by any of the other sciences, then it would be easy enough for Christians to just ignore it and not worry about it. But in order for evolution to be true, we need hundreds of millions of years that don't seem to be available to the biblical literalist. Now, evolution itself doesn't prove that the Earth is old. So how do we get these hundreds of millions of years? Well, We knew we had them before evolution became the accepted mechanism for the diversification of life. We found out that the Earth was old by examining geology and recognizing that there has to have been hundreds of millions of years of Earth history in order to make all the different geological formations that we can see today. Combine that with paleontology, and we now have a history of organisms going back hundreds of millions of years, sometimes the organisms themselves contributing to the formation of rocks, as in some types of limestone. When calculating how many organisms would have needed to be alive in order to form all of the organic limestone that we know about on the Earth, there needs to have been millions of years to accommodate them all. And just to poke at Noah's flood for a second, most organic limestones need calm, warm, shallow water in order to form, which doesn't sound at all like Noah's flood to me. And that is just two other scientific fields of study that support evolution that didn't have to. When digging, we could have found evidence that the Earth is young, but we didn't. We could have not found the fossil record to be in complete agreement with the theory of evolution, but we did. And there are many, many other entire fields of study that did not have to come to the conclusions that support evolution, but they did. So in order to deny evolution, you must also deny several other entire categories of scientific knowledge.
Now, again, the acceptance of evolution, the acceptance of millions and billions of years, is not the salvation issue.
Well, if it's not even a salvation issue, then why choose that as your hill to die on? Why deny science if it doesn't matter for salvation? If God could allow you to accept science and still be saved, why would you choose not to?
You can believe in millions and billions of years, you can believe in an evolutionary process, and still go to heaven.
Okay then, that should be the end of it. No need to jump through a bunch of hoops to try and figure out how all the evidence that points to millions and billions of years could possibly be reinterpreted to fit into a 6,000-year time frame. Just accept the science, accept your salvation, and move on.
That's not the salvation issue.
Wonderful.
However, if you believe in what's called theistic evolution, that God would use the evolutionary process to create what we see around us today, you are saying that God is not omnipotent, that he's not omniscient, that he's a liar, that he cannot save a remnant?
I don't know what cannot save a remnant means, but as to the rest of that, it's actually much easier to have God keep those properties if you accept evolution, because that means that you are willing to interpret the Bible as something other than just literal. So when it describes God as sending powerful delusions to people and stuff like that, you can wiggle out of that because it's not literal. If, however, you believe the Bible is literal, then when it says that God creates evil, you lose the benevolence. When it says that God regrets making humans, you lose infallible. When it says that God didn't know where Adam and Eve were hiding, or that he needed to send some angels to scout out Sodom and Gomorrah for him, you lose omniscience. Someone who can get away with not taking these stories literally can escape that problem, but a literal interpretation leaves little room for doubt. The God of the Bible is most certainly not the perfect being that most modern Christians like to think he is.
That he has not always had a witness on the earth since the time of creation, and you're saying that death of an nephesh organism came before human sin.
Not necessarily. You see, Adam and Eve's first action when they learned of good and evil was to cover themselves up with fig leaves. The implication here is that being naked is evil, but they didn't know that it was evil until they ate the fruit and gained the knowledge of good and evil, and so took action against the evil of being naked. Which means that they were committing an evil act before they ate the fruit, and if evil acts are sinful, then they were sinning before the fall. From a literal perspective, this is a problem. But if it's just a story meant to teach a lesson, then it's no more than a minor incongruous detail at worst, but it could be a justification for the belief that there was sin and evil before the fall.
All six of those things are contrary to biblical teaching.
Yes and no. Depends very much on where you are reading in the Bible for each subject. So, number one, God is not omnipotent. Judges 1:19 outlines a situation in which the Hebrews are conquering the Promised Land and explicitly states that the Lord was with Judah, giving him victory after victory, but he couldn't grant victory over the inhabitants of the plain because they had chariots of iron. Two, he is not omniscient. Genesis 3 has Adam and Eve hiding from God, and God has to question them to figure out what's going on. There's also Mark 13:32. Jesus is supposed to be God incarnate, and yet in this verse he declares that he does not know the hour that the apocalyptic stuff he's describing in Mark 13 will happen. Though that is only two verses after he says it'll all happen before the generation of people who lived with him all die. So, according to Mark 13, the apocalypse happened just under 2,000 years ago, and heaven and earth both both passed away. And actually, if Mark is accurately recording the words of Jesus, that means that the Son of God, who is also himself God, did not know that the apocalypse would actually not happen during that generation. 3. He's a liar. 2 Thessalonians 2:11 states that God sends them a strong delusion so that they may believe what is false. Now, it could be argued that giving someone a delusion is not itself directly a lie, but this is God taking direct action in order to get people believe something that is a lie. An indirect lie is still a lie. He took an action with the intent of deception. In 1 Kings 22:23, God puts a lying spirit in the mouths of the prophets. Jeremiah 4:10 states that God directly deceived the people of Jerusalem by telling them everything would be okay before allowing Jerusalem to be brutally attacked. 4. He cannot save a remnant. I don't even know what this means, so I have no way to counter it. 5. He has not always had a witness on the earth. Again, I'm not entirely sure what this means. Does it refer to humans who proselytize for him? Does it mean an angel who reports back to him about all the goings on earth? Does it refer to Jesus, his human incarnation? I don't really know, and I don't much care, to be perfectly honest. After all, for all interpretations other than having humans to proselytize for him, it implies that he needs someone to keep an eye on things for him because he is not omniscient or omnipresent, so they need to keep him apprised of the situation. And as to the proselytizing witnesses, what does that even matter? Why would he need that kind of witness before humans even existed? In fact, if you take Genesis literally, and this is what you meant by that, then there were 5 days of existence before God had a witness on the earth. And finally, 6. Death of organisms came before human sin. There would have had to have been death before the fall, because eating was still a thing. And eating, even if only plant matter, involves killing the stuff that you eat. Sure, if you go with the everything was vegetarian before the fall interpretation, that means there wouldn't have been any animal death. But why is animal death more important than plant death for this? Isn't everything being proclaimed good supposed to mean no death for anything? And yet, we ignore the death of whatever plants get eaten. And that's basically the end of it. As tomorrow's video will be a separate question, there's really nothing for me to do my normal cliffhanger ending on, so I'll just end it here. Come back tomorrow to see him attempt to answer a question about whether or not the confusion of languages at the Tower of Babel was a mistake on God's part.